Nothing can be more frightening to a parent or caregiver than finding an open bottle of medicine pills on the floor next to your toddler. And as it happens, the majority of accidental poisonings nationwide each year involve children under the age of 5. But a lesser-known fact is that the other group at risk for these types of poisonings are older adults who, for a variety of reasons, may mismanage their prescription and over-the-counter medicines. So why and how do these poisonings happen, and what can we do to prevent them? Here in Central New York, we are quite fortunate to have our own Upstate New York Poison Center, which for over 50 years has helped us with poisoning emergencies. Joining us this morning to shed some more light on poison prevention is Lee Livermore, a public educator with the Upstate New York Poison Center. Welcome, Lee.
Thank you very much for having me here
today. I'm so glad you could join us this morning. You know, many people are not aware that the Upstate New York Poison Center is in some way affiliated with Upstate Medical University. Could you clarify that for us?
Yes, I can. Upstate Medical University is our host institution, and it fits in perfectly with all of our coverage area because our poison center covers 34 counties throughout New York State.
Well, you have, you've been more than 50 years of poison prevention. That's a lot of lives saved.
It is. We were perhaps the fourth or fifth poison center to be certified in the United States. So we have a very long and rich history of keeping our community safe from poisonings.
What exactly do you do at the poison center? I know it used to be called the Poison Control Center. The name has since changed, but your job hasn't changed.
Well, my job as a public health educator is to increase the awareness of the prevention of unintentional poison exposures. The services of the Poison Center to the general public, they know us as a telephone number that they can call in case of an emergency if somebody might have gotten into something and they're not quite sure what if it's a poisoning or not. But our Poison Center really does a tremendous amount of outreach, both in public education as well as professional education. We have toxicologists that are on board that we have rotations of emergency medicine students, pharmacy students, nursing students. We do outreach to all 34 counties, to over 71 hospitals, more than 30 911 centers. And our population base is about 4.8 million people.
That's amazing. That really is. And your hours of operation are pretty much 24/7, aren't they?
24/7, 365. You can always reach a person at the Poison Center.
Well, that's very reassuring, I'm sure, to many people out there. I guess what would you say the most common types of calls are that you get?
Well, more than 60% of the calls coming to not just our Poison Center, but poison centers throughout the United States involve children under the age of 5. From that point, the demographics has begun to change, that typically we would be getting calls from businesses, from hospitals, doctor's offices, 911 centers. What we are noticing is a higher trend and a higher acuity of poisoning. So the next majority of our calls are coming from emergency rooms where a patient has presented and they deemed it's a toxicity. So by the law of protocol, they have to call the Poison Center just to keep all of their medicine management in place.
But the point is, what kinds of poisonings are you seeing? I mean, in what ages? Like in children, what kinds of poisonings do you see?
Typically, children are curious. They'll get into any product that they have access to. Most parents are very much aware that medicines and the medicine cabinets are curious to kids because pills look like candy. Cleaning products, if you take them out of their container, might look like apple juice or blueberry blast Kool-Aid or even water. So it's the look-alike factor that is what attracts kids to all sorts of products.
I would imagine also if it smells good, they may immediately think it tastes good, and that could present problems.
That's exactly true. And so also the packaging is that packaging could be cartoon characters. It could be brightly colored. It may have a picture of a fruit or a berry or something like that that kids think, oh, this must be good to drink.
Yeah, I think the packaging has gotten even more attractive and more of a look-alike factor lately.
It is, and I'm constantly getting questions, aren't there rules or regulations? And there really aren't. The ownership is on the consumer. Once they purchase a product, they have to be very, very careful with it.
So what do you basically try to, what's the basic message to parents then with regards to young children, toddlers, let's say?
Well, with young children, we try to make sure that the parents are aware that they're keeping products locked up, that they're not inadvertently leaving something out. I was speaking to a Monday moms group, and I noticed that a woman had her diaper bag with her and just dropped it on the floor. I asked, is that something she normally does? And she said, yes, wherever we go. And I asked her if I could look through the diaper bag. And we found medicine, we found diaper rash, we found baby oil, we found all of these common products which are good for babies, but present an opportunity for poisoning.
Potentially dangerous.
Yes.
So that's very important. So you do speak to mothers' groups, and obviously as the public educator, that's a big part of your job to get the word out.
Absolutely.
And is prevention, in order to be for prevention to take place, would you say that education of the parents is one of the largest factors?
It definitely is, the awareness, because even as kids begin to evolve from age 1, 2, 3, they may not be as curious. And a great tool that we had found is, rather than using gimmicks of stickers or slogans, we say, stop and ask first.
That's a very, very important concept. Stop and ask first. Well, hold that thought, Lee. We've got much more to talk about, lots more, but we've got to take a short break. We'll continue to explore poison prevention when we return. Please stay with us. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is HealthLink on Air, 570 WSYR. Well, welcome back to HealthLink on Air. I'm your host, Linda Cohen, and today we have with us Lee Livermore, a public educator with the Upstate New York Poison Center. And before the break, Lee and I were talking about the very, very important aspect of preventing poisonings of young children is to get the parents to be aware of doing a variety of things. And you were just saying before, like, locking up the medicines, mm-hmm. being aware of things that could possibly look alike. And isn't there something about separating things and keeping them out of reach and that kind of thing as well?
Yeah, I use a method in my programs that I call investigate and separate. So if you find products, if you find two cleaning products that are close to each other, you want to make sure that you're grouping and locking those up. But sometimes cleaning products get mixed in with food products, or there's products in our medicine cabinet that get mixed together on a shelf. So investigate, separate. It's a great teaching tool to do with your kids. Help your kids become poison prevention heroes.
Oh, that's a very good concept. And also, it seems to me that you mentioned earlier, I want to reiterate this idea that children should be trained, especially young children, to ask, if possible, before putting anything in their mouths.
Yes. It's stop and ask first. We've got a great video on our website at upstatepoison.org. And you could see this video. It's called Stop and Ask First. It's also available on YouTube, as well as on our website. We have a wealth of prevention information.
Well, that's great. I hope people will take advantage of going to the website and checking that out. Now, you know, most parents are aware of the childproof containers or medicines, but is that always foolproof? And are there other products that are, say, child resistance that could also pose a poison hazard?
Yeah, that's a great question. The correct wording is child resistant. Eventually, a child can get into a particular product. If they're persistent. It's meant to slow them down is really what it is. Some people do look at it as the first line of defense. Actually, it's about the second or third line of defense.
After education and
after education, lock poisons up, keep things out of the way. household products do fall in the design of child-resistant packaging, automotive products, cleaning products, and of course, pharmaceuticals, but even standard cleaning products, sprays that we have in the house. It's just a flip tab or a spin of a nozzle to turn it on or turn it off. And most people do not follow through on all of the directions.
You know, at the start of school, it makes me think that there may be some other factors playing a role with kids, especially as they get older. We tend to think of poisonings mostly happening in children below five, unintentional poisonings, when it comes to kids. I know we're going to talk a little bit later about the senior population. Mm-hmm. But with children as they grow, what are some of the hazards you've seen?
The biggest one is what I refer to as peer pressure, is that you've got a great kid from a great family, is interacting with other kids, wants to be sociable, and then they talk them into trying or doing something that could be potentially poisonous to them.
Like what kinds of things are you thinking about?
Well, an example is it happened to my daughter, Hannah, that she was at a daycare and a girl had some mothballs, and she was going around to all of her friends and saying, here's a candy, put it in your mouth right away. And it's a very toxic and not pleasant smelling item. That would be one example. Other examples would be boys daring other boys to do something. Products that are available to young kids in middle and high school do lead into the dangers of abuse, such as inhalation abuse.
Like glue, those kinds of things?
Glue, hair products, any type of items that are spray or have an alcohol base. A strong, potent odor can be abused.
But you have also mentioned at the break, you were telling me that there's some degree of drug abuse or abuse with prescription drugs.
That's exactly true. Yeah. Kids are going to the family medicine cabinet and stealing a variety of different pills and then mixing them all together and taking them. So there's less of a chance of getting drugs on the street when they could just go to the family medicine cabinet and get pills. And then if you're taking something that you should not be taking, was not prescribed for you, it's an abuse, a misuse, and it's also a dangerous potential poisoning.
Yeah, that's frightening when you think about it, especially if they're trading these amongst themselves. You really just never know what your kids are up to or what kind of trouble they could get into. So what do you recommend to parents in that circumstance?
We recommend a good monitoring program. Keep medicines locked up. Do a count on the prescriptions. Keep a list of all the prescriptions that are in the house, because in the event that there was an exposure and someone ended up in the emergency room, you would have all the information that you would need, which would help in the medical treatment.
You know, most people feel that once their kids have grown up, they don't really need to keep that number of the poison control center. I remember while my kids were growing up, I had it right by the phone. And I think many people think that once their kids are grown, they don't need that any longer. Is that true?
That is true. And
true they think that, but is it true that they don't need it?
No, they do need the number, because a poisoning can happen to you at any age. All of us have been exposed to paint fumes or maybe had some food poisoning or took too much or too little of a medicine. Having the number for the poison center available, you have experts on toxicology available 24 hours a day, every day of the year, for both information as well as an emergency call.
So let's say I call the poison center and I have what I think of as a potential poisoning. What do you say to me? How do you handle that?
Well, the specialists who answer the phone are specially trained in poison information. So they'll first gather the history, your age, your weight, what the product was, how much you may have taken or not taken. We run the calculation to determine if there was a danger. And then we'll make our recommendations based upon that.
So you might tell me to call my doctor. You might tell me to go to the hospital emergency room. What generally happens?
It's case by case, there's no blanket recommendation that covers everybody.
But those are the kinds of things you might
absolutely
offer. It seems to me you mentioned earlier also that when people change packaging of items, mm-hmm. whether it be, you have a certain amount of antifreeze left and you throw it in the Coke bottle that you had, as opposed, because you don't want to keep the large container. Is that has that been a source of problems for all ages, I would think?
Absolutely. We recommend keep things in their original container. If you do take something out of its original container, we recommend that you label it. It's usually when a product is being used and taken out of its original container when the opportunity for a poison exposure happens.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense because you could easily think of something of a similar color and you see it in a bottle that you recognize as food, and there you go. You're off and running.
That's right.
Now, we were talking before about the senior population and how they are the second largest group that experience unintentional poisonings. Tell me about that. And do they consider them poisonings?
Most seniors do not. And we're doing the best outreach that we can to help them be aware that if they had a medicine mismanagement, it's okay to call the poison center.
Because... So just to interrupt you for a second, when you say a medicine mismanagement, give me an example of what might happen.
A medicine mismanagement would be that you're not sure if you took your regular prescription medications, and so you take them again. Or if you mix prescription medications with over-the-counter medications, that there's a potential of the active ingredient in both medications could create an opportunity for an exposure.
So it's like a drug-drug interaction that you wouldn't be aware of.
Exactly.
And also, it seems to me, just as in the case of children, where a lot of these drugs have a look-alike factor, I don't know about you, but there have been times in my life when I might be on an antibiotic and at the same time taking my vitamin D pill or what have you. I mean, as I get older, more and more of these pills line up every morning. It would seem to me it's very easy to make mistakes and confuse medications one with another.
Yes, it is very easy. So does having a method of a pill container box or having somebody help make sure that you're taking medicine at the right time, periodically counting the amount of medicine that you have and keeping some good records. There's some excellent tools out there for a medicine journal or products that help you do keep track of what medicines you're taking. Plus also maintaining a single doctor source, a single pharmacy source works very, very well.
Yeah, and I know that in many physicians, primary care physicians will offer, or even the Office of Aging will offer, a list for seniors to carry in their pockets of the medicines that they're taking. Do you think that's a good idea?
Oh, I think it's an excellent idea. And then also keep a second or third copy that you give to a friend or relative. Because if you ever ended up in the hospital and were not able to respond to questions, there would be someone that could show up and explain all the medications that you might be on at that time.
It's very important, very interesting. It seems to me that with the changing demographics, people living longer, more medicines coming out every year, there's more and more opportunity for that kind of thing to happen.
Those are all the right points that you're hitting on, as well as with the global world that we live in today, we have more products on the market which create more opportunities for unintentional and intentional poisoning.
So how can our listeners get more information about the Poison Center?
Well, the first place you would want to start is our website at upstatepoison.org. And if you need to have information mailed to you, you can call the 1-800-222-1222 number. That's the number of the Poison Center. And ask for the health educator, and they'll bring you into my line and I'll mail material to you.
Well, Lee Livermore, thank you so much. You're the public educator for the Upstate New York Poison Center, and you have educated us tremendously today. We're really lucky to have this incredibly wonderful center helping us here in Central New York. And we're going to take a short break now, and so please stay with us. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to HealthLink on air at 570 WSYR.